From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, we take a look at Governor Cuomo's proposed Women's Equality Act. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the latest on hydraulic fracturing for natural gas, and advocates for early childhood education lobby at the Capitol. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, as part of his proposed Women's Equality Act, wants to enact policy changes that will increase penalties for human trafficking and make it easier for sex trafficking victims, especially minors, to avoid being prosecuted for prostitution. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn takes a closer look now at how the state's trafficking laws could be strengthened.
Some 27 million people are victims of human trafficking worldwide, both sex and labor trafficking. That's according to the New York State Bar Association of New York, which has created a special committee to address human trafficking. The subject is also on Governor Andrew Cuomo's radar, as mentioned in his State of the State address. Sonia Osorio is the executive director of the New York City region of the National Organization for Women, or NOW NYC, which is part of the New York State Anti-Trafficking Coalition. She says she is thrilled that Governor Cuomo and his staff view cracking down on human trafficking as a priority, and says trafficking occurs throughout New York.
Whether it's the sex trafficking that happens on the track in Hunts Point or in Hudson Valley area in massage parlors, or whether it's the labor trafficking that happens on the pumpkin farms in northern New York.
Hunts Point, by the way, is in the Bronx. She says the issue of human trafficking in the U.S. is fairly new, with the Federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act having been passed in 2000. She says states started passing anti-trafficking laws in 2005. Osorio says it's time to recognize sex trafficking as a violent crime in New York and convict a person of sex trafficking on a Class B violent crime up from a Class B felony. She would also like to see New York State address the following.
We'd like to see that if someone is a minor and they are trafficked or they're prostituted by somebody, that automatically is a case of human trafficking.
James Dold agrees and says such a provision would greatly strengthen New York's anti-trafficking laws.
Eliminating the requirement of having to prove force, fraud, or coercion for the sex trafficking of minors, and this is a big one, that would bring the state's laws into parity, at least the trafficking laws, into parity with federal anti-child sex trafficking laws, as well as the majority of laws across the nation with regards to making it easier to prosecuting those who are engaged in the sex trafficking of a minor.
Dold is policy counsel for Polaris Project, a Washington, D.C.-based advocacy group that aims to combat human trafficking and strengthen state and federal anti-trafficking legislation.
I think in the grand scheme of things and looking from a national perspective, I would feel comfortable saying that New York has some of the best laws in the country.
He notes that Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York, and Vermont all have anti-labor and anti-sex trafficking provisions on the books. Pennsylvania, however, only has anti-labor trafficking provisions, though there is ongoing work to strengthen the laws. And says Dold, even with strong laws in New York, there is still more to be done.
Making available the seizure and forfeiture of assets that are ill-gotten gains from traffickers because of their trafficking enterprises is a huge component to any comprehensive legal framework.
New York State Democratic Assemblymember Amy Paulin, who represents parts of Westchester County, and Republican State Senator Andrew Lanza from Staten Island are sponsoring the Trafficking Victims Protection and Justice Act, part of which includes the following, as described by NOW NYC's Sonia Osorio.
create a new category of patronizing for prostitution that would be an aggravated patronizing of a minor, or you could think of it as predatory patronizing of a minor. We think that the prostitution law should be in line with a lot of the sex offense laws. You know, currently, if a man is convicted of patronizing and having sex with a minor in prostitution, money is exchanged hands, it should be as serious a crime as statutory rape.
And says Osorio,
if you just leave the laws like that on the books, you're making a real statement. You're making a real statement that, you know what? It's just normal. It's just normal for women and girls to be bought and sold.
The New York State Anti-Trafficking Coalition has launched a statewide effort to raise awareness of human trafficking.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Okay, I'd like to remind folks, at least once during the year, that this program isn't free. The Legislative Gazette comes out of WAMC Public Radio, and it goes across the state. Many public stations, XXI and others, and commercial stations take the show. But we're in the midst of a $1 million fund drive. You've been on the air constantly raising money, and it's amazing what we hear about the programs that WAMC produces, like the Legislative Gazette.
I think, David, to some degree, you're offering a pre-apology for the fact that I could push a marble across the floor with my nose. I'm so tired. But yes, it's been a very interesting week. I just had a wonderful interview with a new state senator named Cecilia Ketchik, and she is the most extraordinary woman. She raises sheep, she sits on her board of education, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful voice. You know that in New York State, we practice democracy in a very funny way. We let the leaders of the majority parties draw their own districts. And then we send our kids to fight for democracy in Afghanistan and Iraq and all those places, which is insane. I mean, the idea is you don't let George Steinbrenner umpire the Yankee games, as I have said for so many years, or do you? You let them, the Yankees, of course, are allowed to, I digress, but allowed to buy anybody in sight, you know, money talks. So what happened here is that Cecilia Ketchik decided she was going to run in a seat that had been designed for a sitting Republican assemblyman, a guy by the name of George Amador. And she takes it on, and she came in here, and we actually had her on several of our shows. And we said to her, I turned around to the people and said, how is she going to win? Where's the money coming from? Well, in the end, there was money. There was Soros money, and there was some other money that came in to help her, although she is wildly for campaign financing so that everybody has an equal chance. And it looked like she had won. Then the Republicans took the votes that had been cast and cast doubt on them and said, you know, you didn't really win. And so they counted and they counted and they counted. And in the end, she lost by 30 votes, but she knew she had won. And it was a Republican judge, by the way. So she went to the New York State Appellate Division. And they told her that, no, you're right, we should count more of the votes. And she won. And Amador dropped out after having been formally sworn in as a state senator. This, of course, has tremendous implications. I asked her if Governor Cuomo, quite a bit after she had won, had reached out to congratulate her, and he hadn't. Some of his people had, but not him. This did not speak well. I've often thought, by the way, and I will say it again, that Cuomo really wanted the Republicans to win. There's all kinds of evidence about that. He did not veto that very famous bill, which he said he would veto the bill that allowed them to continue to draw their own districts. Reprehensible. And so one and one makes two. So she won. And now she's sitting there, and she's sitting there with the regular Democrats. Those are the people who are still the regular Democrats, as opposed to the Klein group of people who made a separate deal, separately arrived at with the Republicans. Some people call them traitors. Some people just say, well, they are what they are, the IDC or the Independent Democratic Caucus. They got payoffs for one or another. I mean, I don't mean to say payoffs as in money, but some of them got committee chairmanships and some of them got other things. And, you know, it was really unseemly. So now there are more Democrats in the New York State Senate than there are Republicans. But the Republicans and this Klein group are sharing the running of the state Senate. Meantime, I sense a guy in a dark cloak sitting behind them all, sort of pulling all of the strings. That's the governor, of course, gets pretty much what he wants out of them. That's how he got gun control. Good thing, as far as I'm concerned. And if they want to stay in the majority, the Republicans have to go along. So the Cuomo people are always telling me, well, you know, he can't get everything he wants. I say, yes, he can, because if he doesn't get what he wants, he pulls the string. The Democrats all get back together, and then the Democrats are running the legislature. And I don't think that's something he wants, because, as you know, he's a little bit of a blue dog Democrat. In addition to some of his liberal causes, he also believes in a strict financial stringency. And from where I'm watching and what I'm thinking, you know, the last thing he wants is a bunch of progressive Democrats in there spending a lot of money that he doesn't want them to spend. And so that's where we are right now. She won. And God bless her, because I'll tell you right now, not a lot of people thought she would.
Let's go to the other big issue that was at the Capitol this week, and that had to do with an NCON budget hearing in which the Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Joe Martens sat in the hearing and said no timetable for a decision on hydrofracking. Still waiting on the Health Department report. Alongside that, a new Siena poll this week shows New Yorkers split over the issue, 40%, 40% for, 40% against. And along with that hearing came a big anti-fracking rally. On that day, you spoke with Mark Ruffalo. The actor?
The Hulk. Well, I asked the Hulk. I said to him, Mark, is this making you angry? And clearly it is that, you know, people's health might be endangered, he's thinking. And I said, well, why don't you just turn into the Hulk? I suppose I was the first person to ask him that. So I think for those people who are opposed to it, the polls may be fairly even. But I think for the people who are opposed to it, it's a much more salient issue. They understand this to say, how can you proceed with something until you know what exactly it's going to do? I think the governor has lost his taste for this thing. In the beginning, I could have sworn they were going to do it. And I think almost everybody agreed with that. They had Joe Martens, the environmental commissioner, all lined up to do it. They had, you know, a whole bunch of studies. And then they got all of these people writing in and yelling at them, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And I think the governor said to himself, who needs this? So, I think that they keep saying we're going to take all the time we need to assure that the people, but I think he's lost his taste for the whole thing. I wouldn't be surprised to see no fracking in New York State.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Advocates for early childhood education lobbied this week at the Capitol in support of Governor Andrew Cuomo's proposal to expand pre-K programs in New York school districts. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
A big push for pre-K funding in Albany as parents, educators, and law enforcement officials voiced their support for Governor Andrew Cuomo's $25 million proposed budget allocation for pre-K that would establish full-day programs in high-need districts. Albany Police Chief Stephen Krokoff says that early childhood education is a key tactic for crime prevention.
It's already a proven fact. There is a clear nexus between education and poverty and crime.
The advocates stress that full-day pre-K reduces incarceration rates while increasing student outcomes in schools, which in turn results in more success in college and the job market. It also financially boosts households where both parents must work. Raheem Smith is a father of four from Long Island.
So between housing costs on Long Island and the price to put one child in pre-K, and we're talking if they go half a day, at that point, we were paying $860 a month for him to go 3 days a week. If you got one, you're about to be broke. If you got two, you're on the cusp. If you got four, you're going to be looking for a job just to work your regular job. You understand what I'm saying? This is very important. And I'm glad to see the governor behind it. And I came in today to make sure that you know, everybody, that we get out and we rally. And we go ahead and make sure that the legislators, the assembly members, that everybody is behind making sure that we get a full day pre-K program. Hopefully, they take care of the high needs districts. But we wanted to see it in every district, ultimately, because we know as parents, everybody needs it, for education purposes and for economics.
Last week in Rensselaer County, Dr. Rick Timms, the executive director of the statewide school finance consortium, addressed a crowd gathered at Columbia High School, warning districts and parents to brace for future teacher layoffs. He finds the problem with the pre-K initiative is that there is only $25 million available.
So this grant will be awarded based on factors, includes measures of district and student need, target services to the highest need schools and students, and maximize the number of children served and the quality of their proposal. The problem, therefore, will be most school districts will not be eligible for this grant. The other problem, of course, is that many schools are cutting back, or cutting back in some way, on full-day kindergarten, which is not mandated. We believe full-day pre-K is a great idea and full-day K is a great idea, but neither one is mandated and neither one is actually supported by the budget. So what we need is some full funding, and I think these programs would be worthwhile. If they're good enough for some kids, they're good enough for all kids, but the funding must be available. If the state wants them, then they must fund them fully.
Cliff Bird, principal of Abram Lansing Elementary School in Cohoes, attended the Columbia High rally and explains the most important thing for the moment is that the conversation is on the table.
Last year when we were here for this very same program, we were going out cold, trying to get people to understand how important pre-K was. It wasn't in the governor's radar, it wasn't in, except for Shelley Silver, it wasn't on very many other people's radar as well. The seeds must have been planted in the right place because the governor's talking about it now. I think it's a separate issue, what was going on at Columbia High School, because every school district is in fiscal crisis. So pre-K is not going to be important if you don't have a school system for it to feed into.
Bird recognizes that some schools can't even afford kindergarten, let alone pre-K.
This need for pre-K goes well beyond social and economic standards. You just heard, if we have parents that have two working parents, they're not at home. Our school system is set up for kids to be ready when they walk in the door. Our society's not set up for that anymore.
Karen Scharf, executive director of Citizen Action of New York, is calling on legislators to support additional state aid funding beyond what Governor Cuomo proposed to protect full-day kindergarten.
So we want to make sure that in addition to this specific pre-K program, that as we're talking to legislators, that they're conscious of the fact that we've got to deal with school aid as well, because it does no good to have full day, or it does very little good to have a full day pre-K and then have a half day kindergarten.
Advocates fear certain school districts may have to roll kindergarten back to half day sessions to accommodate full day pre-K. Kindergarten is not mandatory in New York State. A handful of districts already have cut kindergarten back to half-day sessions. LoHUD.com reports that 13 districts in the Hudson Valley considered cutting back or eliminating kindergarten as they drew up new spending plans in 2012.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State has lost a $2.5 million federal grant that would have helped pay for the acquisition of an Adirondack land tract. The state says it can't afford the cost share, and the Adirondack Council points to that as a reason to increase funding to the Environmental Protection Fund. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation had been awarded a $2.5 million Forest Legacy Grant from the federal government to help buy the 14,600-acre Follensby Pond Tract in the Adirondacks if the state could come up with $13.5 million to complete the purchase. That did not happen, and New York State has lost the federal grant funds. Adirondack Council Legislative Director Scott Laurie says he used the loss of the grant during a hearing on environmental priorities in the New York State budget as an example of the need to add money to the Environmental Protection Fund.
The state's Environmental Protection Fund has been slashed, particularly the open space protection portion of the EPF has been slashed over the last 5 years. And we weren't able to complete the land acquisition projects as fast as we had hoped. and therefore this grant money had to be returned because it had not been used in the last 3 years. Any money that is added to the open space protection line in the EPF is good. A small increase probably wouldn't have been able to recoup or to make sure that the state had been able to use this federal grant this year, but I think it's a symptom of what's happened with the EPF over the last 5 and 6 years, because it's been cut so dramatically that a lot of these projects have been backlogged, and this is the result of that reduction in funding.
The Follansbee Tract is currently owned by the Nature Conservancy, which intends to eventually sell it to the state. Adirondack Chapter Executive Director Mike Carr is not concerned about the loss of the grant funds.
We employ a caretaker there, and we're using it for our scientific research and some of our programmatic work. In the interim, we're paying property taxes and managing the property. The department, Jill Martens, and the department did the right thing in returning the grant. They're free to reapply when the time is right, but they have some other acquisition priorities in front of Follansbee, and the current funding situation within the EPF is such that we put it on the back burner for now. So I do think the department did the right thing. Our priority now is working with the governor and the department, Jill Martens, and his people, to move part of the Adirondack's former Finchland into the forest preserve over the next several years.
Scott Laurie says the Adirondack Council wants the Follansbee Pond land classified wilderness if the state obtains it. Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe says the way the council wants the land surrounding Follansbee Pond used is counter to the federal forest legacy concept, and he's not surprised that the grant was not forthcoming.
I know the Adirondack Council complained that New York State lost the opportunity to use federal forest legacy money to purchase the Follansbee Pond property. If the state just bought the land right around Follansbee Pond, the site of Philosopher's Camp, maybe 2,000 acres, and they could leave the rest of it in forest products production, we failed to understand why the state doesn't just follow what's stated in the State Land Master Plan, which specifically says don't buy highly productive forest lands because the forest products industry is so important to the economy of the Adirondacks. Environmental Protection Fund money should focus on hard environmental problems, which also have an economic component. And what money there is for land acquisition, I think local governments believe it could be used much more wisely than it has been.
New York State will receive federal forest legacy grant funds for conservation easement projects on the Rensselaer Plateau and Mount Lebanon in New Lebanon and Canaan.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1306 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.